From Hollywood, it's the new Edgar Bergen Hour with Charlie McCarthy.
I'll clip your Bergens to help me, I'll mow you down.
Sunday night, and time again transcribed for Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, with Mortimer Snerd, Effie Clinker, Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Ray Noble, Jack Kirkwood, the Mellow Men, yours truly, John Heaston, and our special guest, opera expert Jan Popper. And now, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Here we are, folks, here we are. Once more, Bergen is back on the air. With a little more stomach and a little less hair. All right.
Let's have some newer ones. I'd like a word with you, young man.
Any word in particular, or would you like to take potluck?
No. I spoke to your teacher in school today.
I deny everything.
Yeah, you should. Your grades seem to be getting lower and lower.
Well, cheer up, Bergen. They ought to be hitting bottom any day now.
Yeah. Charlie, if you would graduate from the eighth grade, it would give me a world of pleasure.
Well, now, that's your trouble, Bergen. All you think of is pleasure. Yeah. You should learn to suffer a little.
I have been with your grade, yeah. Your teacher tells me that you have your first history test is coming up tomorrow. Are you prepared?
Yes, you might say so. I'm carrying a couple of loaded cuffs, if that's what you mean.
Yes. I don't mean that at all. You know, this subject should be easy. After all, what is more exciting than history?
Yeah. We know, don't we, fellas? Oh, yes. Time doesn't make strange changes.
Yeah. Young man, aren't you at all interested in the past?
Only in trying to get one.
I see. I'm determined to help you pass this test, so I brought along my old grammar school history book.
Your old history book?
Yeah.
You mean you carry those stone slabs just for me?
Oh. It's not that bad. Your teacher told me that in this test it'll be about King Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Now, when did King Henry VIII live, Charlie?
Well, I don't know exactly when, but he sure did, didn't he?
Yeah. Let's go back to the year 1509.
You go. I'll keep the light burning in the window, Father. A dim one.
Yeah. 1509 was the year Henry became king. Now, Henry VIII was, shall we say, a trifle wild?
Yeah, let's say that. Yeah. Then start building from there.
Yeah. No sooner had King Henry married a woman than he grew bored and got rid of her.
Yeah, he was the originator of Queen for a Day.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good one. I like that.
Yeah.
I think I'll do it again.
No.
I hear he had his own TV show. It was called I Love Lucy.
No. That's enough.
That's one thing old Henry never said.
No.
Please now. Yeah.
Let's carry on.
Now that he said.
Yeah. All right. Wives weren't Henry's only excess. He also liked to eat a lot. He was, shall we say, heavy set?
Yeah, or heavy where he sat.
Yeah, that.
Yes, sir, that boy was all wolf and a yard wide.
Yes, I know. And that is just about the story of him.
Yeah. I still say there's nothing duller, actually, than history.
Well, no.
Oh, how do you do, chaps?
Oh, well, except one exception, yeah.
Ray, I was telling Charlie about Henry VIII.
Uh-huh.
Do you know, Ray, it might even be remotely possible that King Henry was a relative of yours.
Oh, well, that may be possible, yes. No. After all, I have an aunt who was married 6 times.
Oh. Any children?
No, old boy, they were all grown men.
Yeah, I see.
Oh, to be in England now that Noble is here. Yeah.
Ray, do you think it's possible there's any royal blood in your family?
Well, now that I think of it, yes, my great-great-grandfather was a knight of the garter belt.
Yeah. No, 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 Ray, please. It's knight of the garter. Knight of the garter.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh, I've been away too long.
I would say you've been here too long. Yeah, all right.
Charlie, I guess we'd better get back to Henry VIII.
Yeah, let's see how the old slob is doing. Yeah,
it's all right. When Henry married his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, in 1510, you know.
Yeah.
Then after a while, he got tired of her.
That's Henry for you.
Yes. So he called his axeman, and off went her head.
Did she have an operation she could talk about?
Yeah, yeah. Of course, in those days, a king could do no wrong.
Well, you gotta admit he tried.
Yeah, he tried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The old cut-up, yeah.
Well, finally, one day, he proposed to his sixth wife, Catherine Parr.
I can just see old Henry asking now, will you marry me? And then the gal answering, how are you fixed for blades?
All right.
That was pretty good, I thought. I like that one. I certainly got off some good ones.
Yes. That's about all you have.
Yeah.
I'm a little tired of this.
You are?
Yes. Instead of trying to learn something for your test tomorrow, you just sit there and keep clowning.
Yeah.
I quit.
Well, I don't. Wait a minute, Bergie. Bergie, hey.
What?
Something fell out of your history book.
Oh? Yes, that's my old history book.
Yeah, wait. What is it? Well, it's your eighth grade report card.
My report card? Yeah, give it to me, Charlie.
No, not so fast, Buster. Not...
Come on, Charlie. Give me my report card.
No, this is good. Get spelling poor. Arithmetic very poor. History simply stinking.
Oh, no.
You better switch, Bergen. You climb on my knee.
All right.
Hello, Charlie.
Well, Carol Richards. Oh.
How are you tonight, Charlie?
Oh, I'm living it up, Carol. I just caught Bergen with his report card down. But enough of this flapping, Swede. I got something I want to ask you, sweetie pie.
The answer is no.
I didn't ask you anything yet. How can you turn me down?
Well, I just hate to wait until the last minute.
Oh. So well-rounded and so sharp.
Yeah.
Look, Carol, honey, I just want to know if you're busy tonight, are you?
Well, I am, Charlie. You see, I'm baking cookies.
Oh, yes, of course. Naturally, baking cookies, yes. That's very important. Well, then we say tomorrow night. How about tomorrow night?
I'm eating them.
You're eating them. I've been ditched. Sing, Carol.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other. Love and marriage, love and marriage, it's an institute you can't disparage. Ask the local gentry and they will say it's elementary. Try to separate them. It's an illusion. Try, and you will only come to this conclusion. Love and marriage, go together like a horse. You can't have one without the other.
Love and marriage,
go together like a horse and carriage. This, I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
Love and marriage,
an institute you can't disparage. Ask the local gentry, and they will say it's elementary.
Try to separate them.
It's an illusion.
Just an illusion.
Try, and you will only come
to the one and only possible conclusion.
Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. Dad was told by mother, you can't have one.
You can't have none.
You can't have one without the other.
If you wanna have the one, you gotta have the other.
Once again, it is time for the cultural portion of the program, our Poet's Corner. This week, we are honored in having with us the Poet Laureate of the La Brea Tar Pits, Professor William Wadsworth Kirkwood. Please step right up to the microphone, sir.
I will as soon as I get the tar off my feet.
How do you do, Professor? I'm Bergen.
Well, thanks, I'll have one.
Bergen?
Oh, I thought you said bourbon. Oh. What silly me. Yeah.
Professor, I hear you've written a special poem for us tonight.
That's right. It's dedicated to my mother.
How nice.
She's had a rough life working to support us day after day. The people coming to the house with their bundles and poor old Mom cleaning them.
That's touching. Maybe I can give her my business.
You won't go wrong. She's the best bookie on the block.
I imagine things haven't been going too well for you then, have they?
No, poet's life is a hard one.
I believe it.
Oh, the poverty, the suffering, days without food or a
drink.
Don't mind if I do.
Yeah, no.
Oh, it's no fun when they're this easy.
Yeah. I think you'd better get on with your poem while you still can. Professor, the microphone is yours.
Oh, gee, thanks. Ought to bring about $10, I
No, think. No. No, put it down, Professor. Read your poem into it.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Well, here goes. Ode to a Petunia. I have a little garden right upon my windowsill. And to me, my little garden is a never-ending thrill. It's not so large, it's just a dainty row of flower pots with marigolds and mignonette and sweet forget-me-nots. But as I watch them live and grow, a joyous wonder looms. For in my heart I feel akin to all these tiny blooms. There is a mystic bond between these plants and me, 'tis true. I guess the reason is because I'm always potted too.
Ladies and gentlemen, we here on the show feel that the Mellow Men are one of the outstanding singing groups in the country. In fact, we're so proud of them, I'd like each of them to take an individual bow. Boys?
Bob Stevens, top tenor.
Max Smith, second tenor.
Bill Lee, baritone.
Phil Ravenscroft, basso.
That's the deepest voice I've ever heard.
Say, would you believe it, Edgar? His voice is so deep, but he has to pay dues to John L. Lewis.
Oh, and I wouldn't believe that. But I'll say this. If you ever hit uranium, let me know, fellas. Well, what are you fellas going to sing tonight?
Something's gotta give.
Almost did, didn't it?
Something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give. When an irresistible irresistible force such as you. Meets an old immovable object like me. You can bet as sure as you live. Something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give. When an irrepressible smile such as yours warms an old implacable heart such as mine. Don't say no. The fates have in store from their vast mysterious sky. I'll try hard ignoring those lips I adore, but how long can anyone try? Fight, 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 fight it with all of your might. Chances are some heavenly star-spangled night we'll find out as sure as we live. Something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give. Fight, fight it with all of your might. Chances are some heavenly star-spangled night we'll find out as sure as we live. Something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta. I'm telling you, something's gotta give.
Well, look who just came in. Mortimer Snert.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's better than nobody.
Yeah.
Of course, not much, though.
No. Well, I feel good. Well, that's fine. I'm glad you're here. You're a little bit late. I haven't seen you the last couple of days.
Well, you see, I had to go and see my eye doctor.
Your eye doctor?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I had to get a pair of those glass eyes. Oh, you did? Yeah. My first pair.
I see. Are you nearsighted or farsighted?
I don't know. A little lopsided, I think. I don't know.
Did the eye doctor say what was wrong with your eyes?
Yeah, he called it something. He said I got something in something or other or something. That's about as definite as I can be, yeah.
You didn't get all the details.
Hardly, no.
No, I see that. Well, you see, in your eyes, you have the cornea, the iris, and the retina.
Yeah, I have. Yes, yes.
In both of them? In both of them. Oh, yes.
Well, no wonder I couldn't see so good. Yeah. I'm lucky to get around at all.
You certainly are. Yeah, yeah. Well, you're not unhappy having to wear glasses, are you?
No, that's all right with me. Sure. Kind of makes you look a little, extinguished, yeah. And besides, it gives my nose something to do. Yes, it
gives your nose something to do. Yeah, that's pretty silly.
Yeah, I know a good joke about eyes. Yeah, oh, it's a dandy. Yeah. Well, go ahead, ask me.
All right.
All right. You ask me, what one eye said to the other, see? Yeah, and then I'll pull the... snapper. This one will really get you.
All right. What did one eye say to the other?
It said, I think there's something between us that smells.
You get it? Nose? I get it, yes, I get it. Well, you know, eyes are very precious things. We should take good care of them. And by the way, do you know they say eating carrots is good for the eyes?
Is that right? Yeah. Oh, you learn something every day, yeah. Carrots, huh? Yeah. Well, I guess maybe that's right. I've never seen a rabbit wearing glasses. No.
How did you happen to get glasses, Mortimer?
Well, Grandpa saw me squinting and rubbing my eyes when I was trying to read, and he said, I think you ought to go and see an octopus. Yeah.
Not an octopus.
Oh, optimist.
Nah, you're almost right. It was an optician.
Yeah, that's the fellow. That's the fellow, yeah. So I went to this here now medical building and to get my glasses from this doctor. Oh, Dr. O, yeah. Optician. That's the same fellow, yeah.
What was his name?
Oh, I think his name was Dr. Livermore.
Dr. Livermore. Livermore.
Yeah.
Livermore?
Yeah. You heard of?
Yes, I have. He is an obstetrician, not an optician. Yeah.
Well, so what? It begins with O.
Yeah, it begins with O.
That's pretty good for me. Yeah.
Now, don't tell me you went in.
Well, sure, why not?
That's right, why not? Yeah.
I went in and there was a lot of women there sitting around and waiting in there. I see.
A lot of women.
Yeah.
About how many in round figures?
Well, they all had round figures. Yeah. I looked around and I figured out something.
What was that?
Well, I figured out that having bad eyes makes you put on weight. Well, the women seemed to be having more eye trouble than men.
Yeah, I know.
There was a woman sitting next to me and she said she wanted pickles and ice cream so bad she couldn't see straight. Yeah.
Well, did any of the other women speak to you?
Well, there was one woman. She was kind of friendly-like, and she looked over at me, you know, chummy-like, and she said, are you expecting? See? Yeah.
And what did you say?
I said, sure I am, yeah. And I said to her, what kind are you going to get?
Yeah, yeah. What'd she say?
Well, she said, I'll be happy with whatever it is.
I see. Well, that's a nice attitude to have.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I said I wanted something with tortoiseshell.
Tortoiseshell. What did women say about that?
Well, they just laughed. They just laughed, yeah. We got along fine together there, yeah. Sort of had something in common.
You certainly did, yeah. Now, just a moment, Mortimer.
Anyway, I said to the ladies, I ain't no doctor's lady, but I know one thing. I think a lot of our trouble we got was from reading in bed.
Reading in bed, yeah. Well, let me explain to you, Mortimer. That doctor was not an he was an obstetrician, as I told you. That is a baby doctor.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Didn't your father and mother tell you anything about these things?
Well, no, they didn't. You see, after I was born, they quit speaking.
I see. Oh, poor Mortimer. Haven't you any brains at all?
Well, not with me, no. No.
Edgar Bergen Hour, transcribed with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snerd, Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Jack Kirkwood, The Mellow Man, and Ray Noble will be back after station identification. From Hollywood, it's the new Edgar Bergen Hour with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snerd, Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Jack Kirkwood, the Mellow Man, Ray Noble, and yours truly, John Heaston. Ladies and gentlemen, now for our special events department. For an on-the-spot report of the finish of this year's International Dog Sled Race to the North Pole, we take you now to the North Pole.
Greetings from the North Pole. This is your Eskimo correspondent, Edward R. Nanook Kirkwood. It's freezing out. Pardon me, I gotta fix my hot water bag. Ah, that hot water sure warms a fellow up. While we wait here at the finish line of the big race, we bring you a word from our sponsor. This broadcast is brought to you by the North's leading used dog sled dealer, the Laughing Laplander. And remember, we're giving away a brand new 1955 Cadillac dog sled on our big Eskimo quiz show. The 64,000 herring question. And now, back to the big race at the North Pole. And here comes the first dog sled crossing the finish line. I'll go and see who the winner is.
Smörgåsbord, yeah, Smörgåsbord, Smörgåsbord. Come here, Smörgåsbord.
Hey, just a minute. I want to talk to you. Why do you yell smorgasbord at the dog?
Well, I tell you, we call them smorgasbord because they just hate mush.
they hate mush. But, yeah, so do I. Well, congratulations on winning the race, boy.
Well, my name is Axel Svensson. I've been from Sweden.
Well, I'm glad you told me. I thought you were French.
I used to minotaur, you young squirt. Don't get me mad, because when I get mad, I've been a bad actor.
Getting mad's got nothing to do with it. Will you tell the radio audience what part of Sweden you're from?
Yeah, sure thing. Yeah. Eben lived near Stockholm. In one of those places we call the fjords.
What did you say it was?
It'd been a fjord.
That's right, folks. And if you want a fjord, come to the Laughing Laplander. Oh, we're so sneaky.
I think you're as crooked as a corkscrew.
I'll bet you're hungry after the long race.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, my sled, they turned over and we lost their meat. They were used for food, you know.
Oh, blubber?
Well, I cried a little, sure.
Cried a little. Where's my hot water bag? I need a nip.
I haven't eaten so long, I'm sort of losing my appetite.
Careful, boy, you're also losing your accent. But you won a great race, and I think... Uh-oh, here comes the second sled.
Sukiyaki! Sukiyaki! Sukiyaki!
Sukiyaki?
Oh, so, my dog's not liking mush either.
I need more hot water.
This honorable person, very cold, very frozen, almost stiff.
I'm getting there too, boy. You like to tell the radio audience your name?
Also, greetings. I am Yokoshima Matsuoki Horishu Yamachito Nagasumo, but you can call me by my nickname.
What's that?
Liberace.
His face does look like a keyboard at that.
Well, Eben Axel Svensson, eh, wonder is.
Oh, so, very surprising. Yeah. This honorable person expect Axel to break down. That are Oriental joke.
I think you laid an egg foo young right there. And here comes the third place dog sled.
Let me scrutinize there. Who is that fella? Oh, I think that's that Englishman.
Crumpets! Go on, Crumpets! I say Crumpets! Go on!
Somebody up here is going to get stuck with a lot of mush.
I say, it's freezing out there. They're dying like flies. I tell you, they're dying like flies.
Who?
The flies, old boy.
Oh, well, Congratulations. You won third place. Would you like to say something to the radio audience?
Oh, thanks, old boy, but my legs are freezing. So first, I'd like to speak to you about my pants.
Well, what about them?
Well, may I have some?
Jiminy, that was a good joke. That was a good joke.
Oh, so very funny, very funny.
Oh, may I have some? Hot water for everybody.
Oh, looking. Here comes Rust Sled.
I say, something must be wrong. Look, the dogs are riding on the sled and the driver's pulling it.
The driver's pulling the dogs?
Yeah.
Only a moron would do a thing like that.
Well, I'm your boy.
Come on, nice doggy. Now, you get off the sled now, doggy. Off the sled, every one of you.
Well, boy, I guess you brought up the rear.
Well, if you look a little closer, you'll see I brought the rest of me, too.
Now, Gary Crosby is learning the blues.
The tables are empty, the dance floor's deserted. You play the same love song, it's the tenth time you've heard it. Well, that's the beginning, just one of the clues. Yes, you've had your first lesson in learning the blues. The cigarettes you light, one after another, won't help you forget her or the way that you love her. You're only burning a torch you can't lose. Yes, but you're on the right track for learning the blues. Now, when you're at home alone, the blues will taunt you constantly. When you're out in a crowd, the blues will haunt your memory. Yeah, the nights when you don't sleep, now the whole night you're crying. Ah, but you can't forget her, soon you even stop trying. You'll walk the floor and you wear out your shoes. Yes, when you feel your heart break, you're learning the blues. Now, when you're at home alone, the blues will taunt you constantly. And when you're out in a crowd, the blues will haunt your memory. The nights when you don't sleep, and now the whole night you're crying. Yeah, but you can't forget her, soon you even stop trying. You walk the floor and you wear out your shoes. Yes, when you feel your heart break, you're learning the blues. Yes, learning the blues. You're learning the blues. When you feel your heart break, you're learning those blues.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week marks the opening of the opera season here in Los Angeles as well as throughout the country. Therefore, it is with great pleasure that we now take you to our musical corner and present our guest, Dr. Jan Popper, professor of music at UCLA and one of the leading operatic authorities on the West Coast.
Good evening, Dr. Popper.
Good evening, Edgar. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Doctor, just to get a little background on you, are you best known as an opera conductor or a director?
I believe as a conductor, although sometimes I do both.
Well, now, I'd like to ask, what is the difference?
Well, you see, the director of the opera is responsible for staging, lights, props, costumes, and acting. The conductor is in charge of the music. He has to keep his eyes on the musicians, too, and that's difficult sometimes. For instance, suppose the timpani player has a long rest, oh, say, 264 measures. He has it timed, may sneak out for a short beer, and then hurry back to his seat on the 260th measure.
Yes, yes. Yeah, maybe hurry back or stagger back, yeah. But does he always make it on time?
Yes, he comes right in on the 264th measure.
With a hiccup. By the end of the opera, he must really be a happy boy. But tell us, Dr. Pomper, just what do you call your operatic group out at UCLA?
Well, Edgar, right now we are thinking up names. How do you like this? Poppers Popular Opera Pops.
Sounds like a pip. But I don't get the word popular in there. Operatic music never makes the top 10, you know.
Well, not in this country, maybe, but in Europe and elsewhere. When I was director of the opera workshop at Stanford University, one of our most important student opera productions was the West Coast premiere of Benjamin Britten's Peter Grimes. Afterward, the president of the university told me it did more for Stanford that year than the football team, and they had a good one.
Oh, I see, yeah. Well, that kills my punchline. Another thing about opera that puzzles me is, you know, when the tenor gets stabbed, he never bleeds, he just bursts into a song.
Well, let me ask you, do people go to the opera to see the tenor bleed or to hear him sing?
Well, there have been a few times. Well, no.
Actually, it's all fantasy, imagination. Now, when in Rigoletto, Gilda, after she has been stabbed and is tied up in a sack, starts to sing, I must admit, that's a little odd. But doesn't she sing beautifully?
Yes, she does, you know. But some of those mezzo-sopranos, you know, they sound a little bit like this. Sulilabra, ooh. Well, now, you know, that is not singing. That's suffering in tempo. That's about
Well, that's partly true. Actually, opera is an art of illusion. It takes you out of ordinary life, lifts you up into a world of fantasy. You must have imagination to enjoy operas.
Ah, now I'm seeing the light. It's either that or you need imagination to imagine you're enjoying the opera.
No.
I think you got a point there.
Actually, I believe if admission fees could be lowered in some parts of the theaters, more people who really love opera could afford to go.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. And being able to afford it is only one of the problems. You know, they've got to be able to understand it in the language that they're sung.
Yeah, that's true. And if you feel that way, why don't you join me in pleading for opera in English?
Now, would that be good?
Of course it would be good. You may not believe this, but most of our young singers never learn to sing in English simply because there are so few operas written in their own language.
Well, you know, a lot of our popular songs today aren't written in English either.
Oh.
What about cha-cha, piddly-paddly, shaboom, and moon is a pizza pie, and shake, rattle, and roll? Now, this, you must admit, is neurosis set to music or something. If these melodies live, I'm afraid I won't.
I'll go along with that.
Dr. Popper, I've been ribbing you a little bit about the opera tonight, but actually, in this age of bop, we can appreciate good music now more than ever. We mustn't let it die out. And tell me, where can all of us learn a little more about the opera?
Well, if you watch CBS television beginning on November 5th, and every week thereafter, I'll try to help you out. That's a commercial. Yeah. And we are doing a series of TV films called Spotlight on Opera, sponsored by UCLA in conjunction with the Ford Foundation.
You know, that sounds like something that I certainly don't want to miss. And aren't you kind of glad that I asked that question? And I imagine you'll have many interesting experiences to pass on.
Oh, yes. One opera which we did in English, I suspect the title alone lured people into the theater. We were doing Mozart's Così fan tutte, which we translated as That's the Way Women Are. It was in the early days of the war, and we played at the Las Palmas Theater just off Hollywood Boulevard.
Yes.
The title attracted a number of sailors who probably thought they were going to see a burlesque show.
Yes. And they were disappointed when they saw opera.
You'd be surprised. Most of those sailors stayed and listened.
You mean they yelled encore instead of take it off?
That's right.
What is our Navy coming to?
We had another memorable experience. It was the time we took a modern opera by Lucas Foss, The Jumping Frog of Calaveras County, up to Angel's Camp in Calaveras County. You see, it was a regular country fair. We were right next to the rodeo stables, and the bulls and cows would go by and moo at us, which greatly annoyed our conductor. But I guess the cows just didn't like music, or maybe only opera.
Well, I'm afraid it was only opera, because many farmers do have music in their cow barns. You see, I learned about this from my friend Mortimer Snurd, because he uses music at milking time, and he says his cow's favorite numbers are Pale Hands I Love and and Let Yourself Go.
Edgar, how about Sweet and Gentle? Or Something's Got to Give.
Yeah. Once he tried the record Shake, Rattle, and Roll, but all he got was a half a pail of yogurt, and it wasn't even yummy. Well, anyway, your opera at the fair failed with the cows, but it did appeal to the people, though.
Yes, it sure did. As one of the cowhands told me, say, that was some fancy singing, but we sure liked it. It convinced me that far more people would enjoy opera if they could understand the words. So I'll keep right on plugging for opera in English.
Well, Dr. Popper, you've convinced me, and I'm sure that your show, Spotlight on Opera, will win over many more. Who knows, I may even end up writing an opera myself. If I get an inspiration, I'll write it.
Well, don't sit and wait for it. Start writing. Oh. If I may use the piano, I'll show you how. Just give me anything, say a telephone number, and I'll show you how simple it is.
You're going to make an opera out of a telephone number. Well, that's... Okay, I'll give you the one we have at CBS here. spin this into something. Hollywood 91212. I hope you get a right connection on it.
Well, it's very simple. You see, Edgar, I have those numbers right on the keyboard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Even a 9 is there. Of course, I wish you would have given me 3535. I like that telephone number.
Take a bow, Ray.
It's a very noble tune, you see. But you said 9, 1, 2, 1, 2.
That's right.
Well, that's less noble, but maybe it could make a nice Viennese waltz.
Thank you for being with us, and we'll be watching your new show, Spotlight on Opera.
The Mellow Men and Love is a Many Splendored Thing.
Love is a many splendored thing. It's the April rose that only grows in the early spring. Love is nature's way of giving a reason to be living. The golden crown that makes a man a king. Once on a high and windy hill, in the morning mist, two lovers kissed and the world stood still. Your fingers touched my silent heart and taught it how to sing. Yes, true love's a many splendored thing. Once on a high and windy hill, missed, two lovers kissed, and the world stood still. Then your fingers touched my silent heart and taught it how to sing. Yes, true loves are many splendid things.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great honor that once again we bring together for a session of cultural discussion and debate a group of the greatest intellectual titans on the American scene. And here to present them is your moderator, Edgar Bergen.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our round table for squareheads. Tonight we will continue the very interesting discussion that started by Dr. Popper, Whither Opera. Our board of experts will bring you the thinking of not only the man on the street, but the man in the alley. I would like to introduce Senior Jakes Kirkwood.
How'd you do, everybody? Would you repeat the question?
Senior Kirkwood's problem is not so much Whither Opera as Whither Kirkwood. To my left, I have Sir Raymond Noble of Liverpool Opera Society.
Yes.
Awfully glad to have you here tonight.
Thank you so much.
You've spent most of your life in the study of music, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Of course, yes. Really, it's amazing how much I know about it.
Yeah. I imagine so, yeah. Do you have any degrees?
Degrees? Yes. I have a B.A., an M.A., a Ph.D., and an L.S.
As many as that?
Oh, yes. Yes.
A B.A., M.A., B.A., M.A., B.A. What does all that stand for?
Bama fiddle, if you work it out.
Gentlemen, may I now present another panel member who was raised in the country and is familiar with the folk songs, the rural rhythms, which cannot be ignored, I feel.
No, we'll do something like that if you care for that sort of thing.
And that is Hogcaller Snerd and his Snerdville Barnyard Windingers.
Figaro.
That's Figaro. You don't know your opera.
Well, that's Figaro. You don't know my barnyard.
Now to continue our discussion, Whither Opera. Sir Raymond, yes. Most of your life has been spent close to the operas.
Oh, practically touching, old boy.
Is
practically
that so?
Touching, yes. Sir.
You know most of the music, I imagine.
Oh, yes. I can close my eyes and I can hear the Habanera from Carmen, the jewel song from Faust, and the triumphal march from Aida. And...
What do you hear from Madame Butterfly?
Well, nothing, as a matter of fact. To tell you the truth, I'm a little worried about it. She's a sweet girl.
You know, I went to the opera once and I couldn't understand a word they was yelling about.
Yeah. Well, they probably were singing in Italian.
Well, there's no trouble. I was listening in English.
Dr. Popper hopes that we'll have more of them done in English, you know.
Well, are you sure that will work, though? I mean, some of them just couldn't be done in English.
Oh. No way to clean them up, eh?
Shall we get back to the subject, Whither Opera?
Well,
Sir Raymond, do you think opera is for the masses?
Well, I don't know, actually. There are a lot of people who go to the opera and are bored stiff.
Yes. I even get bored sober.
Yeah.
In fact, as far as I'm concerned, just being sober is boring.
Well, from the tittering and snickering out in front here of our audience, I'm afraid they are unimpressed with us as experts.
Well, you mean I didn't them? Like them either.
Gentlemen.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
I use the word loosely, as I've said before. Yeah. Let us startle them with our knowledge. Sir Raymond, what is important about the year 1756?
Mozart was born.
Oh, that's very good. Very good.
Very good.
Kirkwood, what happened in 1762?
Mozart was 6 years old.
Yeah. Well, it was more than just being 6 years old.
He was 12.
No. He gave his first recital. While still a boy, he wrote three great operas.
Can you name the three operas, Mortimer Sturt?
First, second, and third.
Yes. You know,
I gave a recital when I was 10.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. The number was called Elves in the Wildwood.
Oh, it must have been interesting.
Oh, it was, yes.
How did it sound?
Well, you know how elves are. Halfway through, I got lost in the woods. Yeah, I...
Mr. Sturt?
Yes, sir?
What do you know about Chopin?
Well, it's something like ping pong, only it's played with a longer racket.
I see. Mr. Kirkwood, have you studied music?
Oh, yes, indeed. I took up the violin when I was 16 and studied for 5 years, and then I gave it up.
What a pity.
Yeah, I fiddled away 5 of the best years of my life.
Mr. Sturt, what musical education have you had?
Well, I played a one-stringed instrument at church.
At church?
Yeah, one string. Yeah, one string. Yeah, one string. Yeah. I rang the bell. Oh.
I see. Gentlemen, our time is almost up.
Oh, well, that's as good a direction as any.
Yeah, all right. Before we go, I would like to know what you think of opera's future. Now, please, let's all be frank now.
Hiya, Frank.
Nice to see you, Frank.
Hiya, Frankie boy.
Well, I'm fine. How are you, Frank?
Yeah, oh, but... wonderful, Frank. Nothing matter with Frank.
Atta boy, Frank.
Yeah. Well, thank heavens, there's the buzzer.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I thought I felt a little spray.
No. Before we close our discussion on opera, Mr. Snurd, do you have anything to add?
Well, I think that most people, well, some folks anyway, well, maybe a few of them, I pass, I don't know.
Well, I bid 2 no trump.
I double.
I say good night.
Good night, Frank.
Good night, Frank. Good night, Frank.
Well, what's new, John? You look like the cat that swallowed the canary.
Yeah, or a canary that just signed a fat radio contract. Cut loose your canary, Mr. Heaston.
Okay, Charlie, I will.
Gentleness is welcome in everything we do.
And modern taste demands it in a cigarette, too.
Have a gentle Philip Morris made gentle for you.
Nice chirping, but you still didn't tell us what's new.
Well, this, fellows, look. A bright new red, white, and gold package for Philip Morris, the gentle cigarette. Smart, isn't it? And well-deserved. For Philip Morris begins with gentle tobaccos, then refines them to special gentleness to meet the modern taste. That's why so many people turn with such pleasure to the fresh, unfiltered flavor of today's Philip Morris. Remember, now in the smart new red, white, and gold package. Look for it everywhere.
It's time for another bit of sage advice from our rural philosopher, Mortimer Snurd. And here he is with Snurd's Words for the Birds.
Oh, still water runs wet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. And until next Sunday, good night, everyone.
Remember to listen to Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snurd, Ray Noble, and the entire ensemble next Sunday at the same time. Tonight's Edgar Bergen Show with Jack Kirkwood, Carol Richards, Gary Crosby, and the Mellow Men was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Sam Pierce. Script by Cy Rose, Hilda Black, and Zeno Flicker. This is John Easton speaking.